Hello, welcome to your meditation practice as part of the Open Heart Project. I'm very happy to sit with you, and I'm very happy especially to sit with you during this particular time on planet Earth, where so many are suffering from climate-related devastation and the divisiveness that comes with the U.S. election season. For those of us in the U.S., and we're not alone, I know, but there's a tremendous amount to work with. And I personally cannot imagine how one would do that without a meditation practice. And luckily, as you will gather from a story I'm about to tell you, you do not have to be really good at meditating for it to support you. We're going to sit for 10 minutes and we're going to start soon. So take your seat, get settled on the floor with your legs crossed loosely in front of you, in a chair with your feet flat on the floor. If you have back problems, neck problems, you don't feel well, you can lie down, but in all cases, rouse a sense of upliftedness and dignity and appreciation for having a body that is well enough to sit and practice. That may sound extreme, but I don't think it is. So recently, in fact, this morning, I got an email from one of you that requested a video about compassion fatigue, when you just get exhausted from caring about things that and people that seem impossible to change, things and people that hurt you. In those of us who imagine that we are spiritual practitioners can get all sorts of ideas about what we are supposed to do when it comes to things and people that hurt us, anger us. You may think, well, I should have compassion for them. Okay. If you can, that's great. But we're human beings, and that is not always possible. And there comes a point when our efforts, or mine, I'll speak for myself, to feel compassion ends up hurting me, because I walk into situations or conversations that just cause me great pain with the idea that I'm supposed to do it to be nice or a good person or whatever one might think. And that's exhausting. And you get compassion fatigue. So I have several suggestions on this point. And if you don't have time, skip right to the meditation, because that's actually the foundation for doing all of these things. But in the meantime, I want to share with you an insight that I hope is helpful, an anecdote from a conversation I had with the wonderful Vipassana teacher, Tara Brach, some years ago, just she and I, and then a story that really reflects very poorly on me, but is also about compassion. And at the end of this talk, which sounds long, but it will not be long, I want to make a suggestion to you about what I know is really supportive for you wonderful people who want to be a benefit in this world. I feel pretty comfortable saying that about you. So the first thing about compassion is it has nothing to do with being nice. It has nothing to do with your feelings particularly. And it has more to do with your wakefulness, your willingness to be open to your world, to other people, and to what you feel, and to yourself. That openness, it has much more to do with compassion than being nice or good or whatever you might think. So in this, by this definition, you can be a cranky, angry, upset, fearful, sorrowful person. None of that has any, takes away at all from your capacity for compassion. Because please remember, compassion has to do with being awake, open, seeing, feeling, presence. Then you can know what the compassionate thing to do might be. But when you walk into the situations of your life, thinking, well, I need to be nice, or I need to make space, or I need to forgive, my personal least favorite, because you do not need to forgive, then you miss the opportunity for real compassion if you ask me. Don't take my word for this or anything. I really, really effing mean that. You should investigate for yourself. So I'll tell you the embarrassing story first, actually, and then the sweet anecdote of a conversation I had with Tara Brach. So you may have heard this story. I wrote about it in a book, How Not to Be Afraid of Your Own Life, which, by the way, my father, when I first told him the title, thought it was How Not to Be Afraid of Your Own Wife. He was very interested in that book. In any case, so I'm driving in my car, and I'm driving in my car in the city known as Boston, which, if you've ever been there, you know that I am not lying when I say these are the worst, most aggressive drivers, at least in the United States. And by aggressive, I don't mean they're speeding and they're trying to get somewhere fast. I mean, they're looking to F with you. Big overgeneralization. They're not afraid to like cut you off, or I don't know. It's a very aggressive situation. Take my word for it. My particular pet peeve is what happens in traffic circles or rotaries. According to the rules of the road, at least here in the United States, the person in the circle has the right of way. So everyone attempting to enter the circle must yield. I get really, that's my pet peeve. It's, again, the story does not reflect well on me. I'm not proud of it. So I'm driving on a Sunday morning, going to the grocery store. I'm about to approach a rotary, a circle, and I'm like, okay, it looks okay right now. I wonder if anyone's going to try to cut me off. And so I get in the rotary. Life is sweet. And boom, someone comes in from my right and just cuts me off completely. And I happen to be in a little car. This person was in a very big car. I had to put on my brakes to avoid running into them, and I lost it. I got really angry. I don't know why. I started yelling at them. I gave them the finger. I leaned on my horn with the elbow. So, it didn't beep, beep. I was like, Arr! I got right up on their butt. I was just a crazy lady. And I'm like, you cannot do this to me. And they pull into a parking lot. I pull into the parking lot, happens to be where I was also going. They pull into a parking space. I pull into the parking space right next to them. And I look out my window and I point at them and go, put down your window. What am I going to say? I don't know. The window goes down and I'm about to say whatever it is. And I look at who's driving, and it's a young woman who looks terrified. And in the back seat is her baby, who's crying. And I take one look at them and I'm like, I did this. And all I said to her was, I'm sorry. I'm very sorry. And I put up my window and drove away. So the point of this story is, don't be like me. And also, the minute I saw a human being, my heart softened. I felt different. So that's part one of a key to resolving compassion fatigue or reducing compassion fatigue. The first thing to do is to be compassionate towards yourself. That you must start there. You can be compassionate toward yourself for being unable to feel compassion for others. You start where you are. And the second key is when you see a human being rather than a concept or a car or a supposition about what this might mean to that because of what they're wearing, or I don't know, even what they say. When you pay more attention to those suppositions than to the person, it is very difficult to be compassionate because we want to look each other in the eye as much as possible without being silly. Because there's some people, if you look them in the eye, that could be dangerous. So the point, however, is when we feel each other's humanity, the well of compassion is refilled, at least for to some degree, at least for now. And then the final thing I want to say, the infamous conversation with Tara Brach, is I was interviewing her for something. This was years ago. I can't remember what, but it was a delight to talk with her. And at the end of our conversation, I said, I have a personal question for you, or a question myself. And it's the same question that I got this morning. What do you do about compassion fatigue? I asked her. What do you tell your students about compassion fatigue? And I guess I was thinking she would give me something from the sutras or the Four Noble Truths or something. But without missing a beat, she said, Sangha. I tell them Sangha, which is Sanskrit for community. So as I have reflected on that over the years, I have found that indeed that is absolutely the most helpful thing to know. When you're running dry, when you can't feel kindly towards anyone, when your heart is closed, which, hey, it happened to me like 10 times today already. What helps is to connect with other people who will hear you, who you want to listen to, and who will hold space for you. Everything relaxes. So when we try to do this on our own, it starts to feel very claustrophobic. I can't be compassionate. I should be compassionate. And the space, the felt sense of space around you just constricts. But when I'm talking with others, you, for example, and we're talking about our lives and our practice and what's important to us and what upsets us, and I find myself relaxing into a bigger space. And my problems haven't changed. The things I'm pissed off about have not gone away. But I feel empowered rather than disempowered, which is how I feel when I try to manage all of this on my own. So this is a like ridiculously good segue to tell you that during this election season, there's all sorts of other crazy things going on beyond besides that, but everyone I know here in the United States is like suffering. We need each other. We need a Sangha. And the Open Heart Project has a Sangha. It's called, imaginatively named, the Open Heart Project Sangha. And it normally costs $27 a month. I started it like 6 or 7 years ago. It's always cost $27 a month. But I want to give you a free month, starting right now. Just please look for a link on this page and sign up because we need each other. So this free month will start now or whenever you sign up, and we'll go through election season. And it hopefully will be at least one of the resources that you can turn to when you're like, I'm freaking the F out. What do I do? So every day in the Open Heart Project Sangha, somebody like me, but not me every day, shows up at 9 a.m. East Coast time to lead a 20-minute meditation and then stick around for 20 minutes of conversation. That's unbelievably great. And that's 7 days a week. 9 a.m. sit with other people. You can talk your head off. You don't have to say anything. If you can't make the live ones, we send a meditation video every day and audio, but so you can just click play. I get together with y'all every Friday just to talk about it, things. It's 1 hour sort of check-in. And we have webinars, chances for us to get together and contemplate the teachings and how we might apply them IRL in our real lives. So there's various ones coming up, but the one I want to point out right now is on November 5th, our election day, we're going to get together to practice loving kindness, to refill the well of compassion, which doesn't mean being nice, doesn't mean forgiving anyone. It means feeling what we feel truly. As you can tell from my story, you don't have to be nice. But finding a way to keep our hearts open by connecting over and over again with our own humanity and the good humanity of our fellow practitioners. So please think about it. I hope that you will take advantage of this, and it will be great to see you there. And everybody's busy, so I'll just close by saying almost everything that we do in the Sangha can be done on your own time. And even the live gatherings mostly are recorded, and we can send you a link. So don't worry about how am I going to fit this in. Okay, let's practice. Thank you for listening to me. Compassion, as mentioned, is predicated on letting go of ideas and feeling what you actually feel. And starting there, you can start with love, you can start with rage, you can start with exhaustion, whatever it is. And this practice is how we know what we feel. So the practice begins with taking the posture. So you're sitting already. The hands rest, palms down, somewhere at mid-thigh. The back body is strong. You can feel the strength of your back body. And the front body is soft because it just always is. So you can tune into that softness by letting your belly relax. Really let the lower abdomen spread. Sense of spreading. Soften the area around your heart. If something is clutching it, imagine that you could release that grip and just soft beating heart. And let your shoulders relax. The mouth is closed, but the lips and teeth can be slightly parted, helps the jaw to relax. And you can actually relax everything connected to speech. The jaw muscle, the tongue, the muscles of the throat. And you can also let go of the inclination to speak right now because you don't need it. So if you look in, there is no one in there talking. It is quiet. So you can rest back into your own quietude. Breath is natural in and out through the nose. You're already good at breathing. Just keep doing that. The eyes are open and the gaze is cast down to a comfortable spot in front. And one of the reasons the eyes are open is because we remain connected to our world. We remain connected to each other. We're right here. The eyes are closed. There's a withdrawing. Sometimes that's needed. But in this practice, we're seeking to be awake and connected. At the same time, you're just sitting there doing nothing. So let your attention come to rest on the breath. Feel your body breathing. It's different than noticing, feeling. Feel the body expand and let go. Expand and let go. And we practice training attention on the breath, not so we can be good at doing that when we go out into our world and encounter difficult circumstances. We don't want to focus on our breath. We want to focus on what's happening. And because we train by practicing with the breath, we develop the capacity to do this. In our life, pay attention to what is. That's why this is a spiritual practice. Let your mind be as it is. No need to stop thinking. No need to think pretty thoughts. Nothing to investigate right now. Just let the thoughts be as they are, and it's like a stream that's just continually rushing by. Or a train with endless cars that just keeps going. But we jump off the train right now. And we sit on the banks, so to speak, and just feel our bodies breathing while this continues to rush by. No problem. Breath is in the foreground. The train of thought is in the background. And if they switch, meaning you notice that you are no longer primarily focused on your breath, but on your thoughts. That's just a genius move, that noticing is everything. So the instruction here is say to yourself silently, thinking. Let go. Let go. And gently come back to this breath and begin again. So we'll sit together. Thank you so much for your practice. Thank you for practicing with me. Thank you for practicing together. We need each other. See you next time.